walk down the street, they ran the other way.
Hello and welcome to the pilot episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. I'm Corey Strode. At the other end of the tin can and string is my co-host, Joe Crazy Rider. How are you doing today, Joe?
Can't find my pilot's license. How are we supposed to do this?
Well,
it's around here somewhere. Ah, you're not going to turn me in, are you?
Well, that depends. If anybody listens, just don't arrest us.
Well, who are we?
Well, are we doing the pound on the table thing too?
Sure, it worked for Rush.
There we go. First, let's talk about our sponsors. We have two. Two sponsors.
Amazing.
One is a comic strip on the internet, Worldwide News. It's a story of the lowest rated cable news program channel. It's written by me, Corey Strode, and drawn by Dan Moore. And you can read it at www.worldwidenews.solitairerose.com. And Dan said he would write up some ad copy for me.
Good.
He was late. That's why the ad's so bland.
I'm highly upset because I haven't seen Buku sent from this sponsorship.
We haven't even finished our first episode yet. Besides, I used it on Pi.
So who's the second one?
The second one is actually more, they didn't buy a sponsorship, but they're sponsoring us by putting us on their website. It's pwinsider.com. If you are a pro wrestling fan, this is the website you need to see.
Absolutely.
They have audio. They have exclusive news. They have interviews. It is the best bang for your dollar in the world of wrestling. It's a year subscription is cheaper than WrestleMania, and you're going to get a lot more entertainment than you are out of WrestleMania most years.
Or if you're a cheap person like me, you can get it for free. You have to just put up with a few pop-up ads and stuff, but what they put online is just phenomenal. And I tell you, just to get to some of that exclusive content, I'm probably going to be dropping some money soon just to get it, because it's fantastic. I've been listening and watching them for years, and they did one thing a while back, and I'm not even sure what it was about that cemented for me why they're the tops in terms of pro wrestling websites. They actually admitted they were wrong.
Yeah.
So many times you hear just, you know, these websites, they just spit out crap and, you know, dirt sheets and whatever. And these guys did something, and I forget what it is, and it's so uncommon that it happens that it, you know, I didn't even think to remember it, but they just put down, hey, this is, we reported it wrong. And I thought that, to me, that's integrity. And that's, they might blow it by putting this podcast on their, iPop thing, but you know, the point is it's there. So, and hopefully this is free anyways for them.
Yes, it'll be free. Free! Free for everybody.
Free is good.
So, first off, we ought to tell the people who we are.
Well,
the vast audience of listeners.
I am Joe Crazy Rider. I've been collecting comics since Amazing Spider-Man 178. Now, that's different from reading comics. I don't even recall how long I've been reading comics. I do recall a couple things early on in the 70s. I remember reading Uncle Scrooge comics, and later on I found out that I really enjoyed the ones that were written by Carl Barks. I had no idea who Carl Barks was. I found out later on. I used to buy things like Action Comics, but I never bought them if it always said to be continued in the back, because there were no comic stores that I was aware of at the time, and I knew there would never be a chance that I'd find the comic book to read part two or whatever in it. So a lot of times if I looked in the back of a comic, it said to be continued, I put it back. I also recall buying a Superman Family comic book over the Kiss Super Special because Superdog was in it.
Crypto!
Yep, I dug Crypto more than Kiss. But then later on I bought the Super Special for an outrageous price. But that's ahead of the story. Like I said, the first comic I got, Amazing Spider-Man 178. It was given to me by, shout out to my cousin Jerry, was one of those, we call it in Minnesota Kris Kringle, because we had like 15 different cousins. Rather than buy 15 gifts, you just bought one gift for one person.
And he bought you a 35-cent comic book.
He gave me four comic books.
Oh, okay.
I kept The Amazing Spider-Man. I took three Fantastic Four comics of the same era, and I went up to a store called Twin City Comics, which was owned by Greg Ketter, who now owns Dreamhaven Books in Minneapolis. He bought the Fantastic Four for me. I turned around, bought some more Amazing Spider-Man, and it's been going out of control ever since. Years ago, actually a couple years ago, I took advice from Bo Smith, and I found my Amazing Spider-Man 178 and sent it in to CGC to be graded because I wanted to keep it in good shape. And it came back at a 5.0. So well-read copy, and I still have it. And I'll never read it again because now it's sealed forever.
In plastic.
As it says, Len Wein Story, Ross Andrew and Jim Mooney Art. Remember that, because when we start talking about art later on, that'll become important.
Well, and that was the middle of the Green Goblin story that Len Wein did to finish up his run on Spider-Man.
Yeah, and the thing was, back then, I had a clue who Spider-Man was. Through Dynamite Magazine, they covered who Green Goblin was, who Spider-Man was. You had Marvel Tales reprints. It was fairly easy to go back and find old stories. I remember the trade paperbacks they sold for like $3-4.
Oh, yeah.
You know, really tiny art, but I was able to read the early Ditko stories and Fantastic Four. And, you know, eventually, you know, from Amazing Spider-Man, I went into, I think, Nova, because there was a crossover. And, you know, it was just because of the little footnotes, I was able to cross over all sorts of other stuff. And went to DC slowly. I think the last thing I ever bought was X-Men. And by that time, that was after the John Byrne run. So, but enough about me. How about you, Sir Strode?
My read comics to me when I was very small. And there was one day when I wanted to read the Uncle Scrooge comics she'd picked up, and she was too busy. So I sat down and sounded it out and figured it out. I started collecting with Marvel Tales number 59. It was a Spider-Man story as well. I didn't know it was a reprint. So, you know, one of the kids on the bus had said, well, you can't believe what's going on in Spider-Man. I mean, they've killed his girlfriend, Gwen Stacy, and now he's dating Mary Jane Watson, and there's all this, and there's a clone. And I picked it up. Stacy was alive, so I thought he was full of crap. The 70s were actually a really good time to get hooked into Marvel, especially, because Marvel was reprinting all the stuff from the 60s. So I'm reading all these reprints, not knowing they're reprints, picking up the modern stuff and getting very confused. And it took about 6 months before I figured out what was going on, that, oh, this is the early stuff, and this is the stuff from now. I still collect comics. I read way too many. I think of myself more as an accumulator than a collector, because I really like reading comics. Every 2 weeks I get a box from Discount Comic Book Service in the mail. And box day is one of the best days. I get home on a Friday. I'm done with work. I open the box and just spend the rest of the night reading comics. And then I save a few because, you know, hey, 2 weeks without comics is a long time.
I still get mine through a small comic store. And again, that'll be significant later. Uncle Sven's in the middle of St. Paul. It's owned by a bigger comic store, the Gang at the Source, Comics and Games. And the Source, as well as aforementioned Dreamhaven, both have a distinguishing facet that they have both won the Eisner Retailing Award. So it's kind of rare to have one town with two stores that have actually won that esteemed award. It tells you something about the caliber of competition in this town.
And
I do remember, though, when you were talking in the 70s, I used to buy, like I said, I started buying at Greg's store. He ended up moving to downtown Minneapolis, and through courtesy of bus, I was able to get there. But when he closed, I went to another store called St. Paul Comic. But I also ordered back issues through Mile High Comics. I used to get their catalog, and what I'd do is I'd start, like, with Ms. Marvel or Black Panther, and I'd order issue one and then go issue two, issue three. So I read them that way as well.
Okay.
And then when St. Paul Comic, he eventually closed, he decided to stop carrying comics. And that's when I went to Hot Comics, which was the one store over in St. Paul. I liked it so much, I eventually bought the company, if you can believe that. My partner Pat and I, we went in a couple of years after being at Hot Comics, and we bought Hot Comics, rechristened at Hot Comics St. Paul, because the original owners went over to Minneapolis side and did one over there. And that was my first job in comics, was owning a comic book store. And I held on to it from the day Superman died, November 2002. Until
that would be 1992.
See, look, I'm already too far ahead of my story. And eventually, I don't remember when you first visited my shop. But before we get there, where did you get your comics in the 70s when you were starting?
I would get them at grocery stores and the Ben Franklin in Cuba, Illinois. I grew up outside a town of 350 people called Fairview, Illinois. I didn't set foot in a comic shop until 1982 because there just weren't any around there. And there was one in Galesburg. And I had graduated high school and somebody said, hey, you've been to that comic shop in Galesburg. Had no idea what they were talking about. Went there. It was half comic shop, half video rental store. And they also had like baseball cards and stuff. And I was blown away. First time you go in a comic shop, when you're, buying your comics at the grocery store and just hoping they get the next issue of things. And there was all the stuff, all the direct market stuff, because Marvel had started direct market books. Micronauts had gone from newsstand to direct market, so I had to subscribe to it. And the thing that really got me, and it stuck with me for years and years and years, I went in, they had the complete run up to that point of Jack Kirby's new book, Captain Victory.
Mm.
And I grabbed it. That's where Jack Kirby went. Because before then, when people quit working for Marvel, I thought they just vanished off the face of the earth. So I snap up all these, and then I look, and on the cover of Batman, it says, written by Roy Thomas and drawn by Gene Colan. So that's where Roy Thomas went. All these people who'd left Marvel, I thought they'd just, they're not in comics anymore. So I bring them up to front, and the guy says, you're buying this Jack Kirby stuff. I said, yeah, I'm a huge Jack Kirby fan. And he gave me endless crap for it. Mm-hmm. Oh, his art is terrible. It's square fingers and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's always been a big problem I've had with comic shops.
See, I thought that too, because like I said, I got the original Fantastic Four in the paperback books and I knew it was Jack Kirby. And then I looked at some of his stuff. I think it was like a Captain America annual. It might've been New Gods too. And I looked at it and I was like, man, what happened? Is this the same guy? And I didn't actually get more of an appreciation until later on, probably not till the '90s, but it wasn't my cup of tea at that time. Cause like I said, the art style I was looking at, looking at Jim Mooney and Ross Andrew. I like that clean style art, which, like I said, is part of my problem today. But we'll just stick with the 70s. So I must have been of a newer sort, because I went to a comic shop first, and then I discovered I could go to grocery stores or I could go to Kmart and bust open the three packs and get the one comic I wanted and things like that,
And I believe it was right after I left Schindler's that you were working on the Minneapolis convention.
Yeah.
And I had been working on it, and I was just coming back to it, and I was looking for a place to buy comics, and you said, well, I'm going to have a shop. And then about a year or so after that, you started asking me if I could pick up the books at Cap City and bring them over on my way. It was either Wednesday or Thursday, whatever night they were shipping comics back then.
I think it was Friday when it started.
Okay. And eventually you just kind of sucked me in. And I ended up working at your shop for trade credit till you closed.
Yeah.
Then when you opened the next store, I didn't get trade credit, and I worked there anyway because I'm not real bright.
Nope. Nope, you get a discount on that. Yep, what I want people to remember is I and they always forget, I actually sold my shop after 9/11 and ironically sold it back to the guy who bought it from. And then it went off. He ended up selling it to employee, and eventually went under. And then I opened a second shop that was less than 500 square feet again. And that went from about 2004 to 2006. And then it just got to the point where I could keep it as a tax write-off or I could just do other things. And
well, and you had a job.
Yeah, at that time, you know, after I sold the store, and this was again, November 2001, I kept 90% of the merchandise and stored it in a storage area because I knew the job economy was bad. You know, we just had the terrorist attack and things were really downhill. So I figured I would just eBay stuff. And that's pretty much what I did for 9 months till I ended up getting a real job. And it actually worked out pretty good. I still got a lot of stuff, you know, and I do still sell on eBay here and there. So that actually worked out okay. I know a lot of guys who have, you know, small businesses on the side, because the beauty about a small business is you can run almost everything through it, you know, for tax purposes.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, business related. And it helps out quite a bit, but it's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of time. And I hated to close the little store, but I think that was my time. Since then, I've just been buying through Uncle Sven's. Again, it's a little shop. It's probably why I like to go there as opposed to a bigger comic store. I did do DBS for a while. And I think if I didn't get a discount at the small store, I'd probably go back to DBS because they were an awesome service as well.
Well, what are you reading currently that you like?
Oh, yeah. You know, I read things in two different forms. I'm one of the guys, and it might be because I'm getting older, I really dig graphic novels. There's something about being able to sit down and read the whole story without damaging a comic book or digging through my collection and, you know, only finding 5 out of the 6 parts I need to read the story. I picked out just a few that I've recently read. IDW's got Star Trek off the continuity of the movie. They have 3 graphic novels right now. The first one was Countdown, which was kind of a prequel in a way because it talked about how Spock got and Nero got to be in the new Star Trek universe. And when you see the cover, you'll see, you know, Data's there, Picard's there. I think it takes place like 2284 or something, which is like 35 years after the last official Star Trek book. So there's still a lot of time to cover how they get from there to here. But it's kind of an interesting prequel that talks about what happened before Star Trek started. Because, you know, when Star Trek, the movie started, it was off and running. Talks a little bit more how Nero got to be the way he was, a little bit more about his man-on for Spock. The second book I just read is Star Trek Nero. Again, it's based off a prequel, and this one is more from the Nero side of things and actually not only covers a little bit pre-universe. Actually, let me take that back. It covers when they first arrived up until when Spock arrives. There's a 25-year period there where the Nero disappeared, and they refer to bits and pieces of it on the DVD, but this book actually fills in the blank and shows things what happened. There's a third one out that I haven't read yet called Spock Reflections, and based off these two books that I've read, I'll probably go pick that one up because it helps fill the current Star Trek geek within me while we wait the 2-3 years between movies. What you got?
Well, the stuff I'm really liking lately, these are, you know, when the box comes, I open it up. These are the things I grab and I read immediately. First one is Walking Dead, which is a comic put out by Image. It's actually going to be a series from AMC in a year or so. They're working on it right now. It's set after a zombie apocalypse, carrying on the story of some of the survivors trying to, well, basically survive in a world where civilization's been destroyed and the dead walk the earth. There have been going about 6 years. It's up to issue 70, I believe. And the collected trade paperbacks are the number one selling trade, other than Watchmen, in comic shops over the last few years. And
it's definitely on my list.
It's not a, it has horrific parts to it, but it's very much a character-driven drama. The only thing to remember is don't get too attached to any of the characters. Blackest Night. Gosh, another zombie-type story.
Yeah.
I'm loving DC's Blackest Night. It's, you know, their big event for, you know, this year. Green Lantern.
Are you reading
all the dead superheroes from the past however long are back? They're possessed by evil. We don't know what sort of evil, but basically they're back, they're possessed, and they're trying to kill everybody in the universe.
Are you reading many of the crossover books?
Yeah, I am. The quality on them is up and down, but I like the fact that it's, okay, in this book, the characters that are involved in this book that have died are going to come back, and the characters are going to deal with them. The crossover, the mini-series, the ones I've liked have been the ones written by Geoff Johns. You know, the Green Lantern tie-in books. The he's doing a Flash tie-in book that I really like. The only problem I have with it is, boy, does it feel like it's been going on forever.
Yeah. Yeah, issue 6 came. I don't think I picked up issue 6. I haven't been able to find it. But there's only two more issues left. And it's got to wrap up somehow. Or maybe not. I mean, I read the previews. It sounds like there's a new book flying out of that. So, but it's been a fun ride.
Yeah. And then the
last... Are you reading Siege from Marvel at all?
Yes, I've read the first two issues, and it feels like this story has been building up for 7 years, and now everybody's just going to fight. And in the second issue, there was a scene that Sentry ripped a character in half.
Ares, yeah.
Spread gore everywhere. And it just didn't fit for me, because this is this is the same book that ties into the Avengers and Spider-Man, and I didn't think you needed, oh wow, we don't need hard R-rated violence in a book that ties into mainstream Marvel stuff. But we'll see how it ends.
I'll be interested to see what they do with that, because they kind of ended on one of the moments that I love in comic books. It's one of those, oh my God, that last page where Taskmaster goes, Osborn, you might want to turn around. And Osborn turns around, what are you? And his little computer incoming. And you see a reflection of a disc getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's Captain America's disc.
Yeah, it's Captain America's shield coming straight at the...
That's the type of stuff that comic books do that no one else can do. I mean, that would be a great scene in a movie, but the way it was laid out in the comic, I'm just dying to see Siege number 3.
Yeah.
You know, it's just perfect. I think there are other moments like that, I call them like OMG moments, oh my God moments. I think there was a scene in Avengers, I think in New Avengers, where Spider-Man just leapt out after Norm Osborn. They're like, I couldn't find the issue, so I don't know what was going on. Probably the Dark Avengers were chasing the New Avengers, and he just leapt out right on top of it. Everybody else is like, Spider-Man, no. And he just, boom. Just an awesome shot. Secret Invasion Thor, issue 2. You know, they did the whole thing where Don Blake couldn't be there to fight, so Beta Ray Bill was fighting this Skrulli thing. And, of course, what's the last column? As Bill is slowly reaching for the hammer, Bill, stand down, brother. It's okay. I'm here. And you're just, oh, my God, issue 3 is just going to be a fight.
That's one of the things I really like about comics. And the other thing that they're starting to bring back that's been gone for a long time is when the hero reveals himself. think about, you know, when Superman goes into the supply closet or whatever and takes off the shirt, and you see that underneath his shirt, he's Superman. Mm-hmm. You know, Spider-Man, you know, swings out the reveal of the hero. And I think one of the problems in comics, and we'll talk about this a lot because this is one of my hobby horses that I, or a soapbox I tend to stand on. Everybody who works in comics and reads comics is, well, we don't need to see Clark Kent take off the glasses and take off his shirt and be Superman. We know he's Superman. Yeah, but there's a power to that, that he is, you know, now the hero is ready for action. Now the hero's about to do something. And you don't get that for a long time because a lot of, well, we've seen that 100 times. I don't care if you've seen it 1,000 times. When done right, it's got amazing power. Warren Ellis actually has been talking about, he wants to do that in all of his superhero comics. He has the scene where the hero goes from, you know, their secret identity to being a hero.
You tell me you don't, you can't watch the Superman movie with Chris Reeves when he comes running forward and he rips his shirt open. I mean, it's just, I get goosebumps just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Know, it's perfect.
And, you know, the cool moments in comics are things like that. One other book I'm reading, and I think this might turn into a debate, is I am loving Amazing Spider-Man now. I think since they did the One More Day, and are they still calling it Brand New Day? I don't know. But they turned Superman into 3 times a month.
Spider-Man.
I'm loving it.
Spider-Man.
It's just, yeah, Spider-Man.
You had an Amazing Spider-Man 3 moment, you know, where the Doc Octopus sat there and said, you know, I've run off Superman.
Oh. Yeah, I tend to do that. You'll have to slap me around. But I'm loving Spider-Man lately. It's just...
I'll get back to you on the next podcast because I just got all my comics from 600 to whatever the current issue is in one spot.
Oh, wow.
And so now I can sit down and read them. I just caught up on Captain America, which I liked, but I guess... I can't find the rest of my issues of Captain America Reborn. So I just went with Who Gets the Shield Now and kept reading the 2 issues of Captain America. So I'll talk about Amazing Spider-Man probably next podcast.
Okay. But those are the 3 books that I just look forward to every month.
How about some older stuff? Give me like an idea, like some of the older things that collected stuff or older comics that you like to read or pull out and reread.
Well, the stuff I'm reading lately, I love Marvel's Essentials format.
Oh, I'll ditto on that one.
You know, it's 25 issues reprinted in black and white in a big, thick book for $20.
And most of the time, if it crosses over in another book, they'll put that book in there.
Yeah.
It doesn't cut the flow of the story. I mean, yeah, I got the Avengers Defender Wars twice, once in my Defenders, once in my Avengers. But I don't care, because when I'm reading that book, I want to read that story. I don't want to have to stop and shuffle off to another book or something.
Right. I just got done reading Essential Fantastic Four number 6. Now, these are Fantastic Four stories from the early 70s I'd never read before. And it's right after Jack Kirby left. So John Buscema comes on. And his art is amazingly good. It's even better in the black and white. But boy, Stan Lee was tired. Because, okay, the first story is the Overlord from Beyond the Stars, which is such... It's pretty much the exact same story as the Mangog story from Thor. He'd done with Kirby a few years earlier. Then, here's another Galactus story, which is... pretty much the exact same Galactus story as the first Galactus story.
Yeah, they keep bumping into him quite a bit.
Except instead of the Human Torch flying off to get something that scares Galactus away, Reed Richards flies off to get something that scares Galactus away. And then Roy Thomas takes over, and the first thing he does is he retells the origin. And he goes from there, and he starts telling newer stories. Now, they aren't as out there as the Kirby stuff, because when Kirby was on the Fantastic Four, it was, here's 15 new ideas every episode, every issue.
Yeah, I feel like Buck Woodward, say Marvel's pretty much the house that Kirby and Lee built.
Yeah.
And now it's owned by Disney. Woohoo! What a brilliant move on Disney's part. I mean, just all the characters. There's a guy who does a column in IVC, and which is a retailer site. I think it's IVC.com. And he talks about all the characters that Marvel owns that have been forgotten. Characters from the 50s, characters from the 70s that you could utilize for, you know, Nick or Disney's channel or just, you know, a throwaway movie. I mean, a lot of people don't realize it's Men in Black would be the perfect example. I mean, it's just, it's something Marvel acquired through buying another company, Malibu, went on to make a couple great movies, but, well, one movie that was good.
And it made a tremendous amount of money for Marvel.
And I'm assuming the guy who created it as well, because as far as I know, I had never heard from him again, or they haven't done any comic book sequels or anything.
Nope.
Trying to find the original Malibu issues is quite tough.
I'm amazed Marvel hasn't reprinted those in some way, because they own them.
It's hard to figure what Marvel's going to do. I'm hoping with Disney behind them, they'll start doing more like DC. And I see it more with the graphic novels, you know, because they actually have graphic novels. But I always hear that they run out of print and they don't reprint new ones until they have a demand for it. And it's, you know, so that way you might be reading like Ultimates 1, 2 and you can't find issue 3 anywhere because it's out of print.
Yeah.
DC does that sometimes too, but I don't have to worry about it because I'm not a retailer anymore. I'm going to mention just one set of older things that I dug up. I dug up, remember War of the Gods?
Yeah.
That Wonder Woman crossover that got derailed because was one of the artists joined the army or something?
Yeah, the artist, while drawing the fourth issue, joined the military.
And anyways, I dug out all those issues because it crossed over a ton of books, but every book is numbered. If you line them up according to the War of the Gods number and read them in order, it's a pretty good story.
Okay.
But if you try to read them outside of order, or if you're just, you know, you happen to be reading, I think, maybe, was it Legion? I think like one of the Legion books, not Legionnaire Superheroes, but the Legion.
Yeah.
You're reading it, and then as War of the Gods crossover comes along, you're not going to know what's going on because it's like a chapter book. And the next chapter continues from War of the Gods, but may not have nothing to do with the title of the book. You know, they've gotten away from that now because now, at least if there's a crossover into Blackest Nights, if you don't care about Blackest Nights, you can still read Doom Patrol, and it's still going to make sense. Something's going on, and you can go on to the next issue without having to go into the rest of the Blackest Night. But again, if you can find them, and I'd be willing to bet they're all in quarter boxes, dig them up. Put them in order and read them. It's actually a lot of fun if you read them.
That's cool, because I remember when that came out, about halfway through, everything was getting delayed, and I just lost interest.
And
I remember I was working comics retail when they came out, and issue 4, when it finally came out, we couldn't give it away. We had them stacked on the shelf, you know, 20 deep.
Yeah, and I think then, what was it, 90 days or something?
Yeah.
Now it's a lot tougher. There's programs in place where if a retailer knows a book's coming out late, the publisher will come and say, hey, do you want to cut back your order? Or they'll ship it and say, hey, you can return it later, you know. And a lot of that, it's a little more friendly now, but it makes it tougher because later if you decide you want to go find it, you might be out of luck because all the issues have been sent back or never printed to begin with.
Yep. Well, we are at about 36 minutes, and since this is a pilot, we don't want to go too long.
Yeah.
So one of the things we're going to be doing, we're going to have segments in the future, different things we're going to try out. One of the things we're going to have is comics Q&A. That's right. Just like my column on PWI Pop and Comic Geek Speak, people send in questions, and I will do my best to answer them because I have – a scary amount of knowledge in my head about comics. I'm going to do my old trick, Joe.
Okay.
Before we do any of these questions. I would like you to give me a number between 1 and 400.
400.
Issue 400 of The Amazing Spider-Man was written by J.M. DeMatteis and drawn by Mark Bagley. And it featured the death of Aunt May, which was later retconned away that that was an actress hired by the Green Goblin.
Oh, man.
So okay. I have questions on our format. Why don't you just pick one and we'll go with it?
All right. How about, let's see, blah, 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 let's see. Well, we could talk an hour about Marvel Comics, Human Fly. Let's go with this one.
Okay.
And this is one I think I sent you. On a recent crossword puzzle, an answer for Spider-Man's creator was Kirby. Jack Kirby. Assuming it was the late Jack Kirby, I thought it was Stan Lee and Steve Ditko who created Spider-Man. So, who did? Is the crossword puzzle right or are they wrong?
The crossword puzzle is right, but it's even more complicated than that. And this all came to light in about in the late 80s. One of Kirby's assistants, Greg Tiekson, published an article. And what it was, after the Fantastic Four was a big hit, and Hulk wasn't as big a hit, but they were looking for more superhero books. Because at the time, Marvel could publish 8 books a month, and superhero stuff was selling through the roof. And Marvel had, from when it was Timely to Atlas to everything, if something's a hit, they're one of those companies, if one's a hit, then 50 will be even better. So they were scrambling to find more superhero stuff. Now, Jack Kirby had been working with his partner, Joe Simon, selling superhero concepts to different companies. And when they worked for Archie, they're the ones who came up with The Fly, The Shield. You know, the revamps of those characters are new characters. One of the ones they had that Archie didn't want was the Spider, which was basically a guy with a gun that shot webbing. And Kirby brought in his character concept sheets. Stan Lee said, great! However, here's the story I want to tell, because Stan was really into the twist-ending stories at the time. He'd been doing monster stories and was, you know, very much in that mode of writing where, okay, everything leads up to a twist at the end. So we don't know if he wrote out the story or he just sat down with Jack and said, here's the story. Kirby went, started drawing it. As he brought in pages, Stan looked at it and said, this isn't what I want. So he turned it around, gave it to Steve Ditko, who, you know, drew the first Spider-Man story, turned it in. That's what they went with. If you notice, the cover for Amazing Fantasy 15 is by Jack Kirby. That's the one piece of art that survived. Because Kirby drew the first cover, turned it in. Lee liked the cover, but he didn't like how Kirby did the story. The other weird thing about Spider-Man, it was the lead feature in Amazing Fantasy. Will Murray, who's another comic historian, has put forth a theory that the more I read, the more I agree with. The first 2 issues of Amazing Spider-Man were actually supposed to be lead stories in Amazing Fantasy 16, 17, and 18. Because if you look at that first issue of Amazing Spider-Man, it's 2 stories in one issue. And I think issue 2 of Amazing Spider-Man, you could tell that the first story goes for a while, and then they stretch it out to be a full issue. So what his theory is they were going to have Spider-Man as a lead, and then the fantasy stories in the backup, kind of like they did for Strange Tales when the Human Torch was the lead, or Tales to Astonish where Ant-Man was the lead. They would have, you know, backup stories that were, you know, monster stories, basically. So when someone says Kirby created Spider-Man, yeah, he had a hand in it, which is why in the current lawsuit where the Kirby heirs are suing to reclaim the copyrights on all the characters he created. Spider-Man is one of those characters. So did that answer your question?
Yeah, and I got the answer right on the crossword, so that's all that really matters.
There we go. Well, we're at 41 minutes, so we're going to bring this to a close. This is the pilot episode. It's episode number one. Joe, do you have anything you want to plug?
I've got a couple things to plug here. First of all, as we talked about earlier, I used to work with the guys, and I still work with the guys, the MCBA, the Midwest Comic Book Association. Their spring con's coming up May 15th to 16th. It's 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days, and it's at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. They did have a fall con at one time, which was phenomenal get-together. But because of the plethora of cons popping up in the fall, it was decided to move back into the spring. So hopefully they get a chance to get some guests coming in. And they've got one of the biggest guests around. I happen to know from the sources that shall remain unnamed, Nick, that Jim Shooter is going to be one of the guests of honors at the MCBA Spring Con coming up. Again, May 15th to 16th, it's in the Minnesota State Fairground. I believe the website is midwestcomicbook.com. So www.midwestcomicbook.com. And, of course, we'll be talking more about that because, of course, you'll get to meet Corey and I there if you actually plan to go.
And this time, if you're going to come to meet us, stop by and say hi.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people who I saw you at the convention. Well, I don't remember seeing you. Oh, well, you looked busy at the charity table.
We were just having fun. Huh?
Yeah, we're going to keep ourselves busy.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that, too, coming up. Next thing I'll talk about, and as I mentioned earlier, I still sell stuff on eBay. And so since you can pimp out your web strip, which
they're a sponsor.
I enjoy as well. I will pimp out my eBay site, and I do some actually good things with that. It's easy to find. K-R-A-Y-Z. I've been on eBay since 98, so I was one of the few lucky ones that got a real easy name. So just go look for me under feedback, under crazy, and you'll find what I have going.
Well, I hope people enjoy it. This is our first episode, so we're still working the bugs out. Do you have a catchphrase for us to end on, Joe?
Oops, sorry.
What is it Butch always said?
Serendipity, baby!
That was Steve Mongo McMichael.
Oh, well, he used to say that, too.
Oh, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most.
Very true. I think we should go on that.
We'll be back next week with more stuff.